Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, December 21st, Winter Solstice, 2014. This is episode 1146. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks, the simple cloud accounting solution that helps millions of entrepreneurs and small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TechGuy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Our last show before Christmas, 8888 Ask Leo, last chance to get geek advice, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. You can also call us via Skype if you're outside that area. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about technology, how to buy it, how to fix it, how to throw it out the door. 8888-ASK-LEO. Anything with a chip in it. Computers, the internet, home theater, smartphones. Our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, coming up in an hour and a half to help us out. All ahead. Can't be much of a Christmas for the folks at Sony Pictures Entertainment. Kind of grim. I hear they're handwriting things now, making phone calls. They're not committing stuff to email. You know who I really feel for? Because the current employees, you know, Sony's going to give them, fraud protection and stuff like that. The current employees. But the problem is that the databases that leaked out, it contained a lot of information about previous, employees who were going to get none of that, at least at last I heard. That's, there are secret Facebook groups of Sony employees where they're commiserating. Ay, ay, ay. And then, so yesterday, the president says it's North Korea. Was it yesterday or the day before? North Korea did it. What? Really? Seems kind of an amateurish hack. There's all sorts of reasons people are skeptical about this. In fact, there have been a number of articles published in Wired and other places saying, I don't think so. But the FBI claims, no, we have super secret evidence that we are not going to reveal, but we have super secret evidence that confirms it. The stuff they did reveal, they said, it's similar to an attack that came from North Korea before. And the internet addresses that the servers pinged back were in North Korea. I think that the actual guys who did it were probably, who knows, Russians, or for all we know, they could be Americans. They're just, in fact, there's a theory that it's an inside job from some disgruntled Sony employees. They're just laughing. Yeah, North Korea did it. Yeah. It doesn't wash. You're going to have to convince me. And then what's really scary is, then why would the FBI and the president want us to think it's North Korea? And, oh, by the way, I think they said the first example, people have been saying the first example of state-sponsored cyber warfare. Not really. We've been doing it for years. We've been doing it to everybody else. We spied on the Chancellor of West Germany to her in considerable anger when she found that out. We've been messing with stuff for years. They just, Symantec discovered a couple of weeks ago a virus called Regin that was definitely created by some pretty, and this is the thing. I mean, you compare the software used for the Sony hack, which was really junky, had all sorts of flaws. From what I hear, I don't have a copy of it to hand, but from those who have examined it, including some security experts I trust, you compare that to the Regin, which was written clearly by a government, which to this day, despite the fact that it's been around for years, no one has a copy of the original piece of it, the thing that gets on your system and loads all the other stuff, because it was so cleverly done and encrypted, and it turned it into a rootkit and was sneaky, and it snuck onto systems all over the world, air reservation systems, hotel reservation systems, so that we could spy on them. And I say we. The only reason I say we is that there are only two countries in the world that didn't get affected by this virus, the UK and the US. And it's pretty widely agreed by security experts. This thing was so sophisticated, it clearly was a team of crack hackers who did this, Regin. And we know that the Israel did Stuxnet, created a virus, which then leaked out, by the way, and affected the rest of us. That's one of the problems with state-created viruses or viruses of any kind. The Stuxnet virus was used to break centrifuges in Iran's nuclear enrichment program and worked quite well. Nicely designed, too, apparently, except for that little flaw that it leaked out. But other than that, so this is far from the first example of cyber warfare. We've been doing this for years. For years. And I believe other large nation states like England, Russia, and perhaps China, almost certainly China. By the way, all North Korean internet traffic goes through China. So explain to me. If it all, and by the way, the amount of data that was lifted from Sony, it was terabytes, many, 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 you know, 50, 60, huge amounts of data. And no one noticed this going through that really tiny little pipe to North Korea from China? I'm very puzzled by this. I think there's much more to this story. It's possible that they're just wrong. But I have to think there's some pretty good security guys working for the FBI. So what? It's very puzzling. And, of course, the North Korean's response is, no, we didn't do it, but, you know, we'd be glad to help you investigate. Originally, they said, we didn't do it, but we think it was a righteous deed. It was, dude, righteous deed. I am puzzled by the whole thing. Something doesn't smell right. And if you read some of the articles, read the Wired article about why they don't, you know, these security experts don't think it was North Korea. And it doesn't hold to water. There's lots of questions unanswered. I hope we get them answered. But mostly I feel bad for the Sony folks. That's just, And you know, you got to feel a little bad for Seth Rogen and James Franco. And you might say, well, what do you mean? They're movie stars. They got paid millions of dollars to do that movie. Yeah, but you write a movie, you direct a movie, you put your life's blood into that for 6 months, and it just disappears, never to be seen from again. Imagine if you put 6 months of your life into a project that just never happened. That's depressing. I feel for them. And it didn't happen for a dumb reason, by the way. A really dumb reason. The whoever the hackers were, this is why I find this hard to believe it's North Korea. For one thing, they didn't mention the movie The Interview until the media said, I wonder if, could it be this has to do with that movie coming out from Sony about North Korea? And then the hacker said, yeah, yes, it's that's what it is. Yes, stop that movie. And then they said, oh, if you release movie, we'll attack the cinemas, what it shows. And of course, that scared movie exhibitors, the motion picture. I don't blame them. No theater wants to. First of all, movie's going to be a terrible movie anyway. Probably going to lose money. So we got The Hobbit. We don't need. What do we need The Interview for? Christmas Day, really? That's a Christmas Day movie. We got Annie. It's fine. I think the exhibitors didn't care. And why risk the you know, on the off chance, highly unlikely, that something would happen, then, you know, you'd be pilloried in the media, as they used to say in the Pilgrim era. So I understand the exhibitors not wanting to do it. And then Sony Cave said, well, nobody's going to show it, so we're just going to cancel it. And we're not going to offer it on iTunes. See, this is Sony's opportunity to, if it really is North Korea, stick it to them. Put it on BitTorrent. Let everybody see this movie. Give it away. Might as well, at this point. Almost everybody is condemning Sony for pulling the picture. You know, they're saying, oh, that's appeasement. The terrorists win. I just honestly think that there's a couple of Russian hackers who are just laughing their booties off at this.
They think it's North Korea. We fooled them, Ivan.
8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's talk high tech right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. 888-827-5536. My compatriot, the lovely and talented Heather Hammond, is here and taking your phone calls. And Heather is preparing six people, putting them up on the firing line, and we're going to mow them down one after the other. That's not probably a good image.
Wow.
I mean that in the kindest way. We're going to answer their questions and help
kill
them.
You with love.
Yes.
And technology and flowers, and everything's going to work seamlessly.
What are you doing for, are you going to be with the fam for Christmas?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had a practice run last night.
Don't judge me.
Yes.
Don't judge me. I ordered 12 live Maine lobsters.
That's what I'm talking about.
Don't judge me, because people say that's cruel. But I say they're lobsters.
It's a big bug that lives under the ocean. If it were smaller and crawling
across
your kitchen floor, you'd
how cruel could that be? They're in there, so they're but you can't get delivery on Christmas Day.
What?
Well, no, because FedEx doesn't work. So they're going to deliver them to our doorstep Christmas Eve. Santa's bringing me 12 live lobsters.
12 lobsters. 11 glasses of champagne.
As God is my witness, I swore they could fly. All right. Why don't we?
I'm getting some sort of WKRP turkeys.
Yes, there you go. There you go. Nice. You recognize the reference. There you go.
Doorstep.
There you go.
Got it. Good.
I figure if I lose my nerve and don't throw them in the stew pot, I have a hot tub. We'll just put them there and keep them there for the winter. And then release him into the wild.
Right. If you suddenly go, oh, they're too cute to eat.
I don't understand. We're going to have something alive that's no longer alive for Christmas. So why not have it be a bug? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes.
Sea bugs. So I shouldn't have brought this up because now I'm going to get the calls. Let's talk about tech. I should stick with that and nothing else. By the way, Rufus says, one tip, if you are having live lobsters for a Christmas dinner, do not name them before you cook them. Because once you name them, it's really hard.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I think you should name them after Santa's reindeer. All right. I've got no clue.
Oh, there's Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen. But do you recall the reddest lobster of all? Would you help me? Save me.
Get
me.
You out of here. Like I said, I have no clever segue. We just got to help Alan in Orange County with a little issue at
what
work.
What I want to do. I just want to stop singing and help Alan in Orange County. Hi, Alan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. I took over IT support for a small business that uses a Windows 7 server, and the previous IT tech left, and he didn't leave documentation.
Of course not. It's called job security, dude.
Yeah. So there's several hard drives on the server, and I can't access them. I don't know what the usernames and passwords.
Oh, man.
I tried something called Passcape Network Password Recovery Tool.
Yeah.
It didn't give me any hits. Can you recommend something that I could use?
Yeah. I mean, I've not done this, but I am told that the passwords, even in the more recent versions of Windows, like Windows 7, are crackable if you have physical access to the machine. That's the key, right?
Yes, I do have that.
Yeah. And this has been true ever since Windows NT. So I think it's Loft Cracked is the one I hear most often referred to.
L-O-F-T, Loft?
Yeah, I think it's probably hacker spell, L-O-P-H-T. And then there's also Pogo Stick, which the chat room has many times recommended. And what happens is Windows, even versions of Windows as recent as Windows 8.1, put these passwords in something called a SAM file. And so, you can get to the SAM file and either delete it, which starts all over again, or you can hack into it, which most people don't do. So try pogostick.net. What you probably want to do is just wipe out the SAM file. Start from scratch. You still have data. You don't lose your data. Unless the previous guy used CryptoLocker. Not CryptoLocker, I'm sorry. BitLocker. CryptoLocker is a virus. BitLocker is Microsoft's encryption scheme. And it uses certificates, and it would require the that you know the passwords to unencrypt those hard drives. And I don't think there's any way around that.
Okay.
So that's a potential problem. You can verify if it's using BitLocker, probably, I guess. But, yeah, so if he did, you know, in other words, it's possible for him to have really stuck it to you.
All right, I'll try some of
these. Probably a good idea to back up everything first, if you can, with an image copy program to just image those drives. And then that way, if you do delete the SAM and start over, you should be all right.
Okay.
If you think it's encrypted, Uncle Bick in the chat room is saying there's a choice, KON boot. Again, I have not used any of these, but this is a Windows password bypass tool. KON-boot. And you can Google for that as well. I'm not an expert on this stuff. And it's kind of a cautionary tale for everybody. We all, you know, kind of, because you're not technical, business owners very frequently kind of give the keys to the kingdom to some technical guy. And you just pray that the guy doesn't, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of things they can do, which, by the way, many of them are illegal. For instance, if he put a data bomb on there, the timed delete thing, that would be actually a illegal, and he could be arrested for that. Leaving without giving you the passwords is probably not illegal. I am sorry that you have that, but you know, you have a good excuse. So try KON boot first. It sounds like that's they agree, and the chat room is good at this because they're just a bunch of hackers. No, but that we've all had something to do with this.
All right, thanks.
Hey, good luck.
Thank you.
Good luck. At least you got a job. Jim in Tallahassee, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Afternoon, or I guess it's still morning out there.
Morning, afternoon, it's all the same to me.
All right, well, I won't embarrass either one of us to tell the world how long I've been listening and watching you, so we'll just stop there.
We're both old guys now.
Mm-hmm. What I'm looking for is I have numerous slides. My mother traveled a lot, my parents, so my sister went and had them scanned. So I have a large quantity of photos, and I would like to try to sort them into the appropriate folders if I can figure them out.
All right. Hang on for a sec. We got to take a break. I can help you on that. I'll also tell a story of the IT guy in San Francisco who locked the city out in 2008. More to come, Leo Laporte. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo's the number. We're talking to Jim in Tallahassee. You said your wife scanned a bunch of photos?
No, my sister.
Sister.
My mother was a travel agent and therefore traveled a lot.
Oh, neat.
So there are probably about 30 trays worth of the high capacity carousel trays.
Oh, I did that.
So
I've
got
several
thousand photos.
Yeah.
And I had an application back in the old days of Windows 3.1 that had a little sidebar of thumbnails. And what I was looking for is an app that will have that sidebar, because if I come to a photo and then I see three or four more photos that are of the same, you know, area, then I will simply tag them and move them. So what I'm looking for is something that, you know, when you select a photo, it will bring the image you selected up in a larger window.
Yeah.
And then be able to rename it if you have to, and to then move the photos to a folder.
I would strongly suggest a program called Picasa. It's free at picasa.google.com. It is for Intel, Windows, or Mac, and I just love it. And it's, it was a commercial program. Google bought them, and now they give them away. P-I-C-A-S-A.
And that can be downloaded to my Windows 7 PC.
You betcha.
All right, good. Because, the version I used was back in the days of Windows 3.1.
Yeah. No, Picasa is really great. Google's kept it up to date. It supports Picasa Web, which is an online gallery as well. And I think if you want to share these with other family members, that's going to be great. You can have private directories that they see. It has very strong editing capabilities. It does exactly what you wanted, which shows you thumbnails. You click on the thumbnail, you'll see a big version of the image. I think it's a great solution, and I use it all the time. I like it.
What I liked about the old program was that there was a list, there was a sidebar of thumbnails, and so you didn't have to click on anything.
Right. You could scan through all of them at once and then just stop on the ones you want to look at. It's really a lot of people use it to organize their photos.
Yeah, well, believe me, I got a lot of organizing to do.
Yeah.
In fact, more than I want to.
One of the nice things about Picasa compared to some other, and there are plenty of apps that do this, by the way, is that the folders in Picasa represent actual folders on your Windows hard drive. So the organization you give them in Picasa Web or Picasa will be reflected. Even if you got rid of Picasa, you would still see those folders in the organization. It's not like some big database that you can't access. So I really like that.
Do you know if Picasa has a drop-down? Because usually the one application that I have been using that I'm putting up with would have a drop-down menu, and so once you've entered the folder you want to put it into, then it will simply, it has a drop-down, and then you can select whatever folder. Does Picasa have that feature?
Yeah, it may not have a drop-down. You may have to click and drag. I can't remember on that, but yeah. So there's two, and one note is that there are two different ways to organize. You can organize Picasa in albums, but albums are visible only in Picasa, so they require Picasa. But if you organize by folders, those are actual physical folders on your hard drive. So I don't know if it has a right-click and then you select the folder. That would work if there's a short list of folders, but if you get too many folders, and maybe you will with all these photos, I'm not sure you'd want to do it that way. You have a bar on the left where all the folders are. You could just drag things around. You can also tag, which I think is a great idea, and even geotag. So you could say all these pictures are from Turkey and then put them on a map. I mean, this is a modern program. I think you'll like it. I don't know what you used on Windows 3.1. That's been a long time, but I think you'll love Picasa. P-I-C-A-S-A, and I like it that it's free. So, if it doesn't work for you, there are other choices. But, I can't think of anything better than Picasa. Adobe, there's Adobe Photoshop Elements, which focuses more on photo editing, but does have organizational features. I use Lightroom, which is also from Adobe. That's a kind of higher-end program a lot of photographers use. There's UrfanView on the lower end with kind of simpler photo management. But I think Picasa is perfect. It's right in the middle there. Highly recommended. Bob in Des Moines, Iowa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great.
So my 2008 Mac Pro recently died.
Aren't you lucky?
And I
finally that thing died. Oh, that's expensive computer to die. I have 2009 Mac Pro, I think. And it just keeps on going. Well, you're ready for a new one?
I replaced it with a new Mac Pro.
Okay, good.
I bought a
little cylinder.
A little big disk external drive.
Oh, you're rocking and rolling. You must do this for work because that's expensive.
I do it for hobby, but I record music and edit video.
Oh, yeah. You need a lot of storage. I love those little big disks. They're fantastic. They're SSDs, so they're super fast, and then they're in an array. And it's tiny, it's compact. You know what I realized with the new Mac Pro? It's so quiet that the spinning disks I still have are what makes all the noise. If you just have the little big disk in your Mac Pro, Everything's silent. It's awesome, especially for a music studio. So what can I do to help?
So I'm using the first little big disk for my data.
Okay, and is it a terabyte?
And I want to dedicate. It's 1 terabyte.
1 terabyte. Okay.
And I want to dedicate the second just to keep a running backup of that first one.
Ah.
And I don't know what kind of software I would want to use to do that.
Of course, you could use Time Machine. I'm not a big fan of Time Machine. A lot of people use Super Duper, which would create a schedule. It wouldn't be always synchronizing. It would synchronize on a schedule, but you could have that schedule run every hour, every 10 minutes, I guess, if you wanted. Super Duper is great for that. What Super Duper will do is clone disk 1 to disk 2. It'll even make it bootable. So if disk 1 dies, you just switch over to disk 2, and you're exactly where you were before. You're cloned. I also use a program that does some of the same stuff called ChronoSync. I use it more if I want to back up photo libraries, things like that. I think Super Duper is what you want.
Super Duper, okay.
Wonderful program. Love it. And I love those little big disks. They're Thunderbolt 2. They're super fast. The terabyte. Just love them. And to have two of them, that's pure luxury, my friend.
I'm pretty excited about it. They're pretty good.
Yeah, and they're so quiet that you just don't and they're teeny. You just don't know they're there. And I have all this vibration on my desk from the one spinning drive. I just have to get rid of it and bite the bullet. Because, by the way, the little big disk for a terabyte, $1,299. Your secret is out now, Bob. You're a dedicated amateur. What do you use to make music?
I've been using Garage. If I'm not recording just with multi-track, I'm using GarageBand.
Okay. And you use Final Cut or iMovie? What do you use for the video?
iMovie. Yeah.
Well, I think you're serious about this stuff. Because that's a significant
I'm into
outlay.
It.
Yeah. Well, enjoy. I think it's a nice setup. I actually have one on my Mac Pro, too. And while the price is high, the speed is so great. But then I have all these legacy USB drives spinning away, and they're so noisy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at FreshBooks. FreshBooks was a lifesaver for me when I was a young man working two jobs. I was flying up to Canada one week a month to do a TV show up there. And I had to invoice Rogers, the company that did the TV show, once a month. I had to send them an invoice saying, you know, here's my day rate and here's my expenses because they paid for the plane flight and all of that stuff. And I would never do it. Fire up Microsoft Word, figure that all out, type it in. I put it off, which, of course, meant I wouldn't get paid until I did. And sometimes that would be 6 months. I think I really came to a head when I think I waited like 9 months to invoice them. And I sent them 9 months worth of invoices at once. And the Rogers business person said, "You hit the roof." And I was talking about it to Amber MacArthur, who's my co-host on the show. And she said, FreshBooks. They had just started. That was 10 years ago. FreshBooks now has served more than 5 million people doing their accounting, and they've gotten better and better and better. They help you do the invoices. They help you keep track of your expenses. You can even use their iOS or Android apps to shoot pictures of your receipts. Your invoices are easy to make, but they also work better. You get paid faster because there is a pay me now button on the invoice, which I love. And, you know, your clients love that too, because they want to get paid. They're just like you. They put things off too. Makes it easy. Multi-currency invoicing, that helped me a lot because I was invoicing in Canadian dollars. And with some of my clients, U.S. dollars. They automatic late payment reminders take some of the embarrassment out of it. I love it. PC Magazine calls FreshBooks simple and friendly. Its invoice management is among the best. They got an Editor's Choice Award for both the web application and the mobile apps. I am a fan, and I've got 30 days free for you. I want you to try it. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. That's easy. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. We thank them. They're great sponsors for the Tech Guy podcast. We really appreciate their support, and you will appreciate their product. FreshBooks.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Aren't you supposed to? I know I did this. When you see B-52s perform this song, aren't you supposed to get on the ground and writhe around like a lobster? I believe you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless that somebody just told me to do that and was punking me.
No, because Fred goes, damn.
Yeah.
Damn.
I think you have to do it.
Yeah.
I seem to remember doing that, but so the memory is hazy. I'm not sure what was involved. 8888 Ask Leo. That's our number. We're talking high tech. You know what? I'm in a good mood because I got the Christmas lights up, the wreath. It's just pretty. I got the Hanukkah menorah lit, you know. It's a nice time of year. This is the winter solstice today, right?
Yes.
Shortest day of the year today.
Mm-hmm. Four hours of daylight.
It feels like it's already dark out now. It feels like it's like, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Sharon in San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Leo. I have a question. I have an iPhone. It's a 4S.
Okay.
That I wanted to activate for my son.
Yeah.
But when I went to Verizon, because that's where our account is.
Oh, it's a Verizon.
Well, it's an AT&T phone.
Oh.
And so the guy at Verizon said I can't activate it at Verizon because it came from AT&T. So, first of all, I was wondering why that is, and I was wondering how you could get around that.
If it were a more recent AT&T phone, you wouldn't have any trouble. And it may be true that you could do it with a 4S. I don't think so, but it may be true. And he may just not want you to. No, wait a minute. He would want you to. No, maybe he'd want you to buy a new phone. That's probably what he wants you to do. So
yeah.
We always have to take a little grain of salt. But here's the deal. Verizon and AT&T, in earlier times, the bad old days, right back when the 4S was out, used different technologies. Verizon and Sprint used something called CDMA. And AT&T and T-Mobile use GSM. Those are different cellular technologies. So in the early, you know, until recently, you could not, in fact, take a phone from AT&T or T-Mobile and bring it to Verizon or Sprint. More recently, you can. In fact, I just checked out an iPhone 6 Plus that I bought from AT&T. We want to give it to somebody who shall remain nameless. Because he's going to be surprised when Santa delivers this. But I wanted to see, can I take a SIM out of my Verizon iPhone, pop it into the 6 Plus, the AT&T phone? And yes, indeed, I could. So it wasn't locked. It didn't prevent me from doing that. It worked fine on the Verizon network. The iPhone even adjusted. But that's with a newer iPhone. And I think that the real problem is that the 4S predates this era. It's a GSM phone, and it's just not going to work on Verizon. The reason this has changed is because they all are starting to use LTE now. You've probably seen all the ads for LTE and XLTE and VoLTE. They're all using LTE now, and so going forward, all the phones will be compatible with all the carriers. But I think it's because it's a 4S. I'll have to do some research, but I think there's no SIM in there, and so that means there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I know I can take it to AT&T, but then I have to have him on a separate account.
You could do AT&T or you could do T-Mobile.
Okay.
Now, you'd have to get AT&T to unlock it. All those phones that you get subsidized from the carriers are carrier locked. So the phone, it not only does it have the AT&T Death Star logo on the back, but it won't work with a SIM from some other company. But the good news is AT&T will unlock it for you if you've had it for more than 6 months and you've paid it off. And, of course, you have, and you're a customer in good standing.
They did that for us.
Oh, they already did. Okay.
Yeah, and that's why you said you're good to go because you can go anywhere.
Yeah, you can go to T-Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
So, but Verizon, no, because it predates this LTE era.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Well, that explained that. I just wanted to be sure that that
Now, here's the good news. They probably have iPhone 5s. For $0, you should ask them, what's the cheapest iPhone? Apple's still selling the older phones, the 5, I think they're selling the 5S, but I think they're even selling the 5, and it might be $0 with a 2-year commitment. Did the Verizon guy not mention that?
You know, he started to go there, but honestly, I was kind of in a hurry. And
I would. Most places now, in order to get you for the 2 years, will lock you in. I think they even still sell 4S's. Somebody in the chat room says, yeah, they even sell 4S's. That would be $0. Okay. And you get a brand new one.
Right.
Okay. And then take the, you might even get trade-in. Ask them, do I get trade-in for the old 4S? They might even give you trade-in.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll just go back when it has more time.
It has to, we are fortunately moving out of that era now where everything's just going to work with everything else. I was very pleased to see my AT&T phone ostensibly locked. I never even got it unlocked. I just put a Verizon SIM in it and worked great.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Because Verizon uses SIMs now. They didn't used to in those days, in the bad old days. But that's a nice gift. That's a great gift.
Yeah. Yes, I'll go back. I think you're right. I could get something.
I think
probably for
zero.
They're cheap. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Leo.
You're welcome. Nice to talk to you. Thank you, Sharon. Happy holidays. Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Boy, I love it. You know I've talked about that so many times before. I'm sure this isn't a surprise to say I love it. Now we say hi. Let's actually... we'll get to John in a second. I think Jim has been waiting the longest in Long Beach. Hi, Jim.
Hi there, Leo. First off, is your call screener, her name's Heather?
Yes.
She was, I just want to say, she was very nice. Wished me a Merry Christmas.
Isn't she great?
And great.
We love Heather. She is the greatest. And that's why I don't do this show unless Heather's sitting right across from me.
And she was really cool.
Yeah.
And as far as lobster goes,
yeah.
If you have a live lobster,
yeah.
Why I go to a restaurant and have lobster tail, because I could not kill something and do all that and then enjoy eating it afterwards.
Well, like I said, don't name it, because that really makes it hard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And B-52s.
Yeah.
Coolest band. I saw them back in the day when they were really hot.
With the beehive hairdos.
Oh, love yeah.
Them. Love them.
Very incredible, fun show.
I agree. And did you writhe on the ground like a rock lobster?
Of course.
Oh, good.
You have to.
Okay, good. I wasn't being punked. It was in Las Vegas. I just, the memories are hazy.
Yeah. Okay, so now my main questions.
Yes.
I have a laptop. It's getting kind of old. I need to update it and get something new. I've had Dell for the last couple of ones that I've had, and I've been looking at...
I hear the magic music. You know what that means? We've got news at the top of the hour. Hang on, okay? We'll complete that thought in a moment. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. That's me. On the shortest day of the year, winter solstice. So that's why we have all our festivals of lights. We light up our houses and our candles and just let's bring light to a dark world. And that's what we're doing today. Your world is a little darker if you've got technology in it. but that's I'm here to help, you see? 888-ASK-LEO is the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free. Anywhere in the U.S. We were talking to Jim in Long Beach. He needs a new laptop.
Yeah. And I love what you just said. I'm bringing light to a dark world.
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
Yeah. I think that there's always been a winter solstice celebration of some kind, even in the pre-Christian era. And I think it's because it's so darn dark. And so we light fires. We light lights. The old day, they'd put candles on Christmas trees. Don't do that. That's a little too much light.
No. You will then have a big insurance and have a
do not do that.
And do all that.
My dad, I don't know why. I have a few memories of my father's still alive. Of course, I'm not saying he's not. But I have a few memories from my youth. And for some reason, my dad would always say, a fire on Christmas is always tragic. That was like his wisdom that he handed down to me. So I live by that.
And that pretty much is kind of true.
It's true. I don't know why it was in his head and why he said it every year, but he did. A fire, he said, son, A fire on Christmas is always tragic. What? So, Jim, now let's get back to you, because enough about me.
When I first got into computers, I had the old-fashioned Gateway desktop, which I don't think even exists anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think they got absorbed like everybody else.
And then I went to some HP laptops, and recently I've had Dell.
Okay, I like Dell.
Love.
We buy Dell in our business offices. We just bought 8 or 6 new edit stations for our video editors at the podcast network, and they're all Dells. So I'm all with you on the Dell.
And right now I'm looking to upgrade and update. And I had a recommendation about the Apple Mac iPod 2, and then also the Microsoft Surface 3. And those are kind of, it's like a laptop and a tablet. Kind
yeah.
of.
Yeah. So
like a hybrid.
Are you stuck on Windows? That's what you want, right?
I am used to Windows.
I think Windows 8.1 is pretty nice. I think the best way to run it actually would be a Surface Pro 3. Not the cheapest by any means.
And I'm wondering, do those actually hook up to a printer?
Yeah. It's got a USB port.
You can fully do a printer.
Yeah, nowadays most printers, it has a USB port, so yes. Nowadays most printers use Wi-Fi, so anything with Wi-Fi can print. So if you buy a new printer, almost certainly, unless you get a really, really cheap one, you'll get Wi-Fi on it.
That is what I have here. I have Wi-Fi in where I live.
Yeah, and is your printer Wi-Fi? Or do you not have a printer?
No, I do have a printer, and it is Wi-Fi, but I do actually, the printer is actually an older printer from the computer, so I do have to actually plug it in.
Okay, yeah, so this has a USB port on it, the Surface Pro, I think, has a couple of USB ports, so you absolutely can plug it in. Kind of eliminates the portability of it when it's plugged in, but you just unplug it and you take it with you. I think the Surface is a good choice. It's pricey. It's we're talking over $1,000, but it has the best tablet screen of any tablet screen. The best, widely agreed. It's got a stylus, which I think is kind of useful. You've seen the ads, they're running on every darn show in the world where the guy's singing about his Mac, and then he says, "Wait a minute, I want your Surface Pro instead." Because it has a kickstand. But if you want Windows, I think that's a good choice. I think Dell makes great laptops, too. You know, my favorite Windows laptops are from Lenovo. I think the X1, if you've got money to spend, the Lenovos are good. Basically, the rule is that you can get really cheap Windows computers. They're usually not great. Although, I know a lot of people who say, well, for $200, that HP Stream is pretty great. Yeah, because it's a $200 computer that's surprisingly good, but still not comparable to a $1,000 computer. So generally, there is a kind of a consumer grade, inexpensive, kind of loss leader, and Dell sells them, everybody sells them. And then there's the higher end stuff. And generally, if you can afford it, I would get the higher end stuff. It'll last longer. It'll give you less, of a headache. I also very much like my Acer S7, which is very thin and light. And a really great with a touchscreen, very nice Windows 8 laptop. So there's some good choices out there. But I think Surface Pro 3 not a bad one. John in Bitterford, how do you say that? Bitterord, Maine.
Bitterford.
Oh, we left out a f. Bitterford.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah.
Hi, John.
You were talking about lobsters. Yeah. Well, you were talking about.
Well,
lobsters.
You come from the land of lobsters.
Well, there are people running lobster boats within about 3 or 4 miles of where I live. A friend of mine is a boatyard mechanic. He fixed the engine on a lobster boat, and the lobsterman made him in lobsters, I think 60 of them, and he helped beat a couple.
He made him in lobsters. Wow.
Yep.
Now, when I was growing up in Providence, Rhode Island, of course, we ate Maine lobsters, and they were big. You get 2-3 pounders. The chicken lobster, the 1 pound lobster, but now I think they're not as big as they used to be, right? Have they fished out the lobsters?
I don't know what the size limit is on it. I think it's stay pretty much the same.
All right. So you can still get it probably up there where you are on the lobster mother load. You can still get the big lobsters.
Oh, again, there's a size limit on it. I'm not, just not familiar enough with it.
Right. That's okay. I didn't mean to make you the lobster expert. What can I do for you?
Well, anyway, I've got the three Windows machines recently reformatted. I did what you always talk about where you wipe everything clean, and you reinstall everything, and it runs better.
Good.
My question is, can you reformat like a cell phone with like Android Linux OS or a Macintosh with a standard Mac OS?
Yes.
Do the same thing?
Yep. Okay. On the cell phones, all smartphones have a kind of reset command that will wipe it and bring it back to the base firmware, and then you reinstall everything. It's not quite the same.
Right, so,
but it's pretty close. It's what you want.
Actually, I'm talking to you on it right now.
Okay.
Mine is, it runs Gingerbread.
Oh, my.
And basically, I know if I hold down the start button at the top of the phone, if I hold it, I'll actually start the reset process. But,
yeah.
It was like, I did that by accident when I first got the phone, and now everything's running sluggish and it's doing
it again.
Things, and I'm
do it again. Although because it's Gingerbread, that is really old. That's Android 2.2. We're at 5.0.
Which leads to another question. They told me because it's dual core, I could actually put something like ice cream sandwich.
But you could. You could update it. Yeah, but it might not make it less sluggish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think, I mean, how old is that phone? It's 3 years, 4 years old?
You're right. It's LG 2X or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. You could get a, I would get a, I think a better phone, a newer phone would be the way to get rid of the sluggishness better. It just, among other things, SSD does get sluggish over time. And it may not be fixable by formatting. You're not really formatting. You're not doing the same thing you did with a clean format on Windows. You're merely kind of erasing your personal data and stuff. And so it may not speed it up in the same way, erase the apps. In fact, if you've updated the operating system, for example, it will, on Windows, it will bring you back to the operating system that Windows, that machine came with. On a smartphone, it'll bring you to the most recent operating system you've updated to. So it's not really wiping off the whole drive. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mele kalikimaka, everyone. Happy holidays. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I love it. I love it. Moses in, I love your name, Moses in Apple Valley, California. Hi, Moses.
Hey, how you doing, Dale?
I'm doing great.
Good. My question is, I keep getting the blue screen. I already cleaned up. I already did a factory reset, and I keep getting it.
Yeah, so when we talked about this last week, too. When you get a blue screen of death on Windows, that's such a serious error that Windows can't go on. It says, we have to stop now. You have to turn me off and reboot, and we're going to start over from scratch. And there are a very few things that can cause a blue screen of death.
Okay.
They have to be serious flaws. Usually it's not in software because, like, a program like Internet Explorer literally can't cause a blue screen of death. If it crashes, it just stops, but the operating system is unharmed. Drivers, on the other hand, can, because the thing that drives your video card or drives audio and so forth, they have access to what's called protected memory.
Okay.
So an error in a driver can cause that crash, but almost always, and I think in your case this is true because you completely refreshed Windows. You started back from scratch and it's still happening. This is a hardware flaw.
Oh, it's a hardware problem.
Yeah. And the most common source of these flaws is a flaky power supply. So you've wiped the drive. So that eliminates pretty much any thought that it might be the drive or the software on the drive.
Okay.
So now you've got to figure out what it is. And it could be a lot of things. It could be a component on the motherboard. It could be a component on the video card. But it's a hardware failure so bad that Windows says, you know what, I'm just going to stop now. We're done.
Okay. Now, that it coming back by itself, does that mean anything? It restarts by itself?
Yeah, that's a really bad crash. So normally a blue screen of death, the screen goes blue, and you get all this useless diagnostic information. It does a memory dump. and it just stops, and it's your job to turn it off and turn it on again. You're saying you get the blue screen, you get the memory dump, and then it reboots?
Yeah, it starts up all by itself again.
Yeah, that's almost certainly the power supply.
Oh, okay then.
We'll
have to look into that. And, well, thanks. Thanks a lot for your help.
You're welcome. I mean, it's hard to diagnose these things remote control, and, of course, it could be lots of other things. When you get a spontaneous reboot, that's worse than a blue screen of death. That means just horrific things happening in memory. It's like it's like a nuclear bomb in your memory just went off. Not good. But I would the nice thing about a power supply is if you're pretty handy, you can actually replace it yourself. Be careful. You don't want to open up the power supply. There's stuff in there that could shock you. But you can just remove it from the case. They're inexpensive. Get a good replacement power supply from PC Power and Cooling or someone like that, and make sure it's got the wattage you need. Power supplies are rated by the number of watts they deliver, so match your existing power supply. And usually that's worth $50. It's not an expensive fix. You can also bring it to a shop. In fact, the shop could probably give you a better diagnosis. But given what you told me, boy, it sure sounds like the power supply. Let's go to Ottawa. John's on the line. Hi, John. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
That sounds like me. Can you hear me?
I hear you great.
Ah, great. Good to talk to you.
Happy solstice.
Thank you. I have a problem with viewing YouTube. It's a Windows 7 laptop, and I've been using it for about 2 years, and it's been fine. But I've noticed in the past 6 months or so, when somebody sent me a YouTube link, it was an HTTPS link. And it wouldn't work. It would come up unformatted on the screen and the videos weren't available. If I deleted the S and reloaded it, it was perfectly fine.
All right.
But now what's happened is it refuses to let me delete the S.
Yeah. So let me explain what that is and give you some theories as to what might be happening. HTTPS, you might even know this, is secure HTTP. It means the transaction is encrypted. Your bank uses it. Amazon uses it online. It means that no one along the way can see what's going on between you and the endpoint. Usually videos you're getting from YouTube as HTTPS?
Yes, it always, doesn't matter what I put in, it always goes to
HTTPS. Yeah, Google has been very aggressive about, and I think perhaps misguided in this, but we could debate that, it wants every website to be HTTPS all the time. The campaign is HTTPS everywhere. The theory being that hackers can take advantage of an unencrypted transaction between you and a website. And so if everything is encrypted, we're all a little bit safer. The reason that the web wasn't designed that way originally is because there is some overhead in unencrypting and encrypting. But modern computers are so much faster, it's not a problem these days. So Google, you know, probably rightly says, and I think everybody's going along with this, Microsoft agrees, that we should move to HTTPS on every server. Most servers don't do it, but of course Google's servers are going to do it.
Yes, well, I don't have any trouble on any other website with HTTPS, only YouTube.
Yeah, and what version of, what browser are you using and what version?
I've tried all browsers, Opera, Chrome, Firefox, they all behave
they all do that.
The same way.
Let me ask you if your date and time are correct.
Yes.
The reason I ask that is because HTTPS uses certificates to validate the server that you're visiting, in this case YouTube, is what it says it is. Mm-hmm. And the certificate is time-based. So frequently when computers get older, they lose their memory. Their non-volatile battery dies, and their volatile battery dies, and they don't remember the date. And if your date resets itself to 1970 or whatever. I guess it was what was the original date on PCs? I can't remember. But 1904. If it resets itself to 1904, the certificate, of course, was not valid in 1904.
Yeah.
And so you will have this issue. So it's very common for that to happen if you don't have your clock set properly.
Yeah, that doesn't look like the problem because it's fine.
It says it's the right day and it doesn't care. The time doesn't matter, but the year and the date does.
Yeah, everything's fine. I've tried deleting cookies and reinstalling.
Does it happen? You're presumably you logged into your Google account while you're doing this, right?
Not originally. I didn't have a Google account, but I do now, and it didn't seem to make any difference.
Yeah, you might log out of your Google account and see if that changes things.
Yeah.
Or if you have a different Google account, sign in with it and see if that changes things. I'm not sure.
It's an odd problem.
Yeah, well, it is and it isn't. This is the issue with certificates, and one of the reasons why some of us have said Google is being a little aggressive in its timeline for moving HTTPS everywhere. And these are the kinds of little weird issues that crop up when they do that. So the page comes up without a warning.
No warnings. It just comes up.
The page, the text on the page is...
the left-hand side.
The text on the page is unformatted?
Yes, it's all down the left-hand side.
Okay. So what's... That means the full page isn't loading. The CSS that does the formatting is not loading. And that's another issue entirely. I'm going to have to think about that. Hold on a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt coming up to talk photography. If it happened in Chrome, I'm going to think out loud here. If it happened in Chrome, he has Flash and has an up-to-date Flash because Flash, the real thing to test this with is Google's Chrome. If the same thing is happening in Chrome, what I think is happening is he's not getting a full page load. He's not getting he's getting unformatted text, which means the full page is not loading. So I don't think this is a certificate error, although it's interesting that it worked. Well, you know, it might be an older computer. And I think it might be it's probably an internet connection issue. It's very odd. You think he has JavaScript turned off? I'm just visiting the chat room for their thoughts on this one. My sense was it's limited to this computer. I think Archandra got it. The other thing that happens with HTTPS connections, if the MTU is not correct, you may get fragmentation, which is firewalled. I think that's what's happening is that because it's HTTPS, he's getting partial page loading. Are you on, John, are you on DSL or are you on a cable modem?
DSL.
Yeah. So it's a weird issue that probably does have to do with your router.
But as I say, my wife's computer is fine.
Yeah.
Firefox, and so I wasn't suspecting the router.
Yeah, I wouldn't either, because that's a limit, you know, if she's not having the problem. But it sounds what I'm guessing is you're not, I know you're not getting the full page to load. You have any security software on there? No.
I've got Avast, but I've turned that off.
That wouldn't do it.
That doesn't make any difference.
Yeah. And it does happen with Google. So you think Archandra is saying, and this is a weird thing, that your MTU settings are wrong. That you can mess with in your drive. It would be unique to your machine as opposed to hers. You can go into the drivers and look at, I guess it would be on the Ethernet card. So you go in, the properties of the computer, and then go into the drivers, device manager, and look at your Ethernet card and check the MTU. Is there any way to get it to work? Like you refresh the page or anything?
No, not at all. No. So it's only YouTube that this problem occurs.
Yeah, but that's because Google is doing this HTTPS thing.
Yeah, but a lot of other sites do, and that doesn't seem to be an issue.
We're going to put a link in the chat room. We're going to put a link into the website from DSL Reports. It's a TCP tweak tool, which will actually go through. I mean, this is a long shot, but it does fit the symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So optimizing the MTU on your machine might help. See, what's happening is you're not getting the full page load, and because it's HTTPS, it's probably blocking the remaining part of it. I have to run now, but we'll put a link in the show notes if we can. If somebody could find that DSL Reports link to the TCP diagnostic tool. We'll put a link in the show notes there. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. Just to wrap up our conversation with John in Ottawa, I talked with him off the air for a little bit. It's a very obscure, we think, I mean the chat room and I, think it might be a very obscure issue that has to do with internet settings in that particular computer. So we're going to put a link at the show notes at techilabs.com to a TCP tweaking tool on DSL reports that might help. And maybe also a link to Microsoft's own TechNet pages. It's the maximum transmission unit, we believe, is misset. Is that weird? Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Germany. You know, remember 2 weeks ago we had technical issues with Chris Marquardt? His DSL just wasn't working. His Skype wasn't working. We got it working fine. You know what was wrong? He had IPv6 settings. look at these computers are not meant for normal people. That's obvious.
You know, I moved from the old place and the IPv6 there worked just fine. And then I used the same configuration here and everything.
You changed it.
Broke.
Everything works and you look great. And the audio's perfect. And
good.
I mean, I don't know. It's all voodoo. So, Chris, we're going to do Chris Marquardt is a photographer. Of course, he does those great workshops. You can find it at Discover the Top Floor, a wonderful photographic podcast, Tips from the Top Floor. And each month he gives us an assignment, something to get you out taking pictures. And yes. Each month we review those assignments. And, Chris, you've sent me the links for the review?
I have.
All right.
It's the fall assignment.
And he doesn't mean the assignment for the season fall. That was the word. Fall. All right.
It can be interpreted in so many different ways. And I was looking through the pictures, and we got a lot of wonderful, great pictures. But, you know, I mean, most of them were related to the season fall. And I chose two that are completely related to the season fall, and the third one is kind of slightly related to the season fall. So the first one is by Lee Werling. The title is, okay, the title is twit_fall_7522_.
You hate those names, and you still said, all right, we're going to look at it anyway.
I'm in a Christmas mood. Let's just slip that for now. And that's, well, it's fall leaves. It's a man standing above the camera. So the camera is on the ground, and he's got, what's it called in English, a rake?
Yeah.
And he's raking fall leaves together. And it's just, this is a wonderful perspective. It gives you this beautiful foreground in the picture. And looking up, it's a very unusual perspective. So that's why I chose it. It really worked well for me. Also,
we got a lot of leaf pictures, by the way. A lot of leaf pictures.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. And what also works, what I really like, is you have this handle of the rake leading towards him back into the picture.
There's a geometry that's interesting, isn't there?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
For one thing, it looks like the head of the rake is bigger than he is.
Which is a perspective thing. This is a pretty wide-angle picture. This is what happens when you do wide-angle. And, but Lee, well done. I really like the picture. It's a really interesting one to look at. And lots of lines leading to the guys, the lines from the rake and the handle, and everything is working out really nicely here.
Good job, Lee. What else you got?
All right, second one is by James Aralus. I think that's the name. Titled Sunset Surfer on a Fall Day. So first I looked at it, and I mainly picked it because of the light in this picture. So it's a sunset picture. You see the light coming from the back. It's a surfer who's just in the air at the top of a wave, and there's this splash of water behind him, and you, the way it's backlit is just magical, and the way the light shines through the wave is also magical. And then I thought, well, can I choose this, because what does it have to do with fall other than it's been taken on a fall day? And then I realized
he's falling.
I mean, every surfer is falling all the time, so that is pretty much a good excuse here. And the light, the translucency of the wave, the way the sun coming in at a low angle and shining through the wave is just magical. It's beautiful when it makes a silhouette of the surfer. That's And then the contrast you have in terms of the color, you have this warm sky and then the cool waves, and the whole thing is just a wonderful combination of colors and contrasts and backlight, and totally worked for me.
This was a good assignment. I think we got many, many pictures and some of the best pictures ever. And what's weird is this is not the only surfer picture we got.
It's true.
Who would have thought? I like this true. One. James Aralu, sunset surfer on a fall day. By the way, all of the, I know it's the radio and you're not seeing the images, but we'll put them on our Tech Guy Lab site, techguylabs.com. Or you can go to Flickr. That's where all this stuff lives, and the Tech Guy group on Flickr. And you can see all of the pictures, quite a few of them. This one is gorgeous.
Well, the third one is almost the same picture. If you look at it, just briefly look at it, it kind of feels like the same picture, but it is, and it's by Colin Smith, and it's Maple Leafs 4. Again, the title, okay, let's not talk about the title, but it's a maple leaf stuck in between two pieces of wood, I think, and it's backlit by the sun, and the sun shines through the yellow leaf, and the yellow leaf kind of projects onto the wood. And it's a very similar picture to the one before in terms of how the geometry looks and how the translucency looks, but it's obviously a different subject. And the light, again, it's the light that completely captured, that completely captivated me here looking at this picture, because of how the warm leaf and the warm light from the leaf kind of ends up on the, I think it's a table or something.
For people who say, oh, I don't want to participate, I'm at home, I don't go anywhere interesting, I don't see anything interesting, it just shows you could take a picture anywhere. I mean, this is about
this
as simple as...
This is a picture you take in your backyard,
yeah.
You know?
It's as simple a picture as you can get, and it's stunning.
And if you manage to take such a picture like this in your backyard, then you can go anywhere in the world and take amazing pictures.
I have to remind myself of that, because sometimes I think, oh, I'm, you know, I see the same thing every day. I come to work, I go home. What am I supposed to take pictures of? So you just, how do you develop that eye, Chris? How do you get an eye so that you go, oh, that would be pretty. Oh, I'd like to see more of that. Or
lots of practice, and then look for light. Light is really the key. All these pictures have a lot to do with light, especially the last two ones are really come down to how the light shines at things, from which direction it shines at. So if you look at lots of good photography and you look at the light in the photography and try to recreate some of that, I think that's a very good thing. And you can do this at home. You can do this just at your window at home. You don't even have to go outside. If the sun shines in, you have a light source and you can try different angles and things. So
honorary mention to our moderator, Renee Silverman, who took a lovely picture of lighted trees.
That's beautiful, especially because of the reflection. That really makes the picture.
I love it. And this is at the zoo in Griffith Park, the Los Angeles Zoo. So, Renee, because she works so hard to maintain our group, I want to make sure she gets a lot of credit. She does such a great job.
She's amazing.
What is the assignment for this month?
You know, it's been raining here for days and days and days, and it's just, I thought the climate is so weird. Let's do climate as an assignment.
Climate?
Climate,
like it.
And that can, you can interpret this in all sorts of different ways, but yeah, climate.
All right, so here's how this works. Get on out there and take a picture every day, and it can be with your camera phone. It doesn't have to be a fancy camera, but it should illustrate in some way the word, the idea, what climate means to you. And as you can see, fall could be falling from a surfboard, so climate can be anything. Submit that picture. You can submit one a week to the Tech Guy group on Flickr. You have to have a Flickr account, but that's free. Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. We'll see you soon.
See you soon.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Chris Marquardt, forgot to mention, is doing a workshop in February in Iceland. Okay, talk about climate. He's got one more seat to fill, so if you're interested, tfttf.com/... Well, actually, go to discoverthetopfloor.com. I think all the workshops are there. They're going to go... Actually, I could see why you do this. They want to see the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis. Wouldn't that be fun to take pictures of that? The Aurora Borealis with Chris Marquardt. He does some neat stuff. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, We go on to John in Panama City. Hey, John.
Hey, Leo. Thanks so much for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Leo, I am just sick. I was checking my Gmail account, and there was a notification up in the notification bar, and I clicked on that, and it was a picture, a sunset picture that I had taken a few days ago. And I thought, well, how in the heck did that end up on my laptop? Because I took it with my phone. And I started looking around, and I found that all of my pictures from my phone and my laptop had been loaded into a web album under Google.
Yeah, it's a private web album, and only you can see it. Good news.
Well, are you sure?
Yes.
I mean,
because I do this too. Now, somewhere you have a setting, possibly on your phone, possibly on your laptop, but this is, fear not. This is not what you think it is. There is Google Plus allows you to automatically back up all the photos from your smartphone to a private, and it is private, gallery that you can then use as backup or use it to post pictures from. I have it. Everybody who has Google Plus potentially can have it. So I would check in. You said you have an iPhone?
No, it's an Android a Note phone? 3.
Yeah, okay. I would check in the Google. Do you have a Google Plus app on there?
Yes.
Yeah, check in the Google Plus app, and you can turn off backup. I leave it on. I just find it very handy because then all my images are backed up. Now, you can verify that they're private just to make yourself feel better by looking at the photo, and when you see it, it'll say not shared underneath your name on the right-hand side there. This is just a backup. In fact, at the bottom, it will also say photos from auto backup in those photos. So it's just taking those photos. Now, there's sometimes some benefits to that. Incidentally, again, you can turn this off. I don't know how it got turned on. It should be off by default. But you can turn it off by going to your Google Plus app and disabling it. But one of the things that's kind of fun with Google Plus is they will do something called auto awesome to your pictures. And they'll pick pictures that they like, and they'll also make albums out of them, which is kind of fun. But none of this is public. All of this is for your own delectation.
Okay, well, where do these...
They're stored on Google. I mean, if you're worried about Google, you can turn it off. They're stored on Google. But here's, for instance, here's a picture I took of one of my coworkers. I took three separate pictures. It made this little framed collage out of them. That's an auto awesome. They call it the mix. But no one can see this except me, and I guess now you, because I'm sharing it for those watching the video at home. But I think this is a nice feature. But if you worry about Google, just turn off the backup, the auto backup.
Okay, I've been looking around in settings, and I haven't found that yet. But I'll keep looking.
Oh, I'll tell you where it is because I have it on here. Let me open up my note and the Google Plus account, and we're going to go into settings.
And where is settings?
Under general, where is settings? You see the three dots on the right? That's a menu. On the top
I don't
screen.
Have that.
Maybe you don't have an up. Do you have the latest version of Google Plus?
Possibly not. Although I would think it would.
You're auto updating. Go to the App Store and just make sure you have the latest version. So on my phone, there's three dots in the right hand corner of the top there. Settings is one of the items. There's a menu somewhere on yours, and the very first item says auto backup. Automatically backup new photos and videos to Google Photos. Backups are for your eyes only. You don't like that. Simple enough to disable it. You just click the on-off switch and turn it off. Any photos and videos taken while auto backup is turned off will be backed up if and when you turn it back on, but you don't have to have it. I love it, personally, because if I lose my phone, I don't have to worry. And I use different phones, different cameras, and so forth, and it makes it very easy for me to share pictures with people and on and on and on. You may also, if you don't have a Google Plus app or you want to look at another spot, there is a Photos app that is on most Android, modern Android phones. You can look at the Photos app, and there'll be settings there right at the front.
Okay, well, I feel better.
Well, yeah, I don't blame you because I take lots of pictures of my butt, and I wouldn't want those. No, I don't. But I understand photos are private, and you know you don't want them to be revealed to the world. So it's a little weird when you then go to your browser and you see all these pictures of your body parts and you go, wow, is everybody seeing these? No. Just you. just you. Moving. I feel for our last caller because, I mean, that's scary. You see all those pictures up there. But I like that. I like that feature. But if it bothers you at all, if you're worried about, I don't know, somehow, I don't know how they would leak out by accident, but maybe they would. Just turn it off. Just turn it off. There are lots of services that will back up your photos for you. Dropbox does it automatically. Facebook does it automatically. Microsoft has unlimited storage now with OneDrive if you have a Office account. You know, you subscribe to Office 365. Then you have unlimited storage. OneDrive will back it up. All of those apps, you put them on your phone, you say, automatically back up my photos. In every case, they're private. But I just think this is like a backup service. And it's generally either free, as in the case of Google, or very low cost. 8888 Ask Leo. Our next call comes from Steve in San Diego. Hi, Steve. Leo Laporte.
Hey, Leo. Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm mad at your Chargers.
Well, we pulled one off last night.
Hey, if I were a Charger fan, I would be very happy.
We should have done a little bit better, but you know,
hey, you won. That's all. It's a one in the win column. That's all you really need.
That's right. That's right.
Wow! Hey, Leo, what a game.
I'm looking to upgrade my iMac, and I've been looking at the 27-inch Retina.
Oh, so gorgeous!
It is gorgeous.
I love it.
And I was wondering about the Fusion Drive as opposed to the SSD. I'm a photographer and use a lot of Photoshop and Lightroom, and so
you want a big drive, don't you?
Well,
I have a Fusion Drive on my iMac. The advantage, of course, is it's a giant 3 terabyte drive. It's a little faster than a spinning drive, but it's not as fast as an SSD. So it capacity trumps speed. Hold on a second. We'll talk some more when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The marvelous tech guy theme. Thank you, Ashley Witt, for that. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Nathan Staten, our musical director all year long. Heather Hammon, the phone ranger, answering the phones all year long. It's been a great 2014. I thank you all so much. And I look forward to a great year next year. The Tech Guy Show. Yes, we'll be here next week. Don't worry. Our Boxing Day episodes. You know, you've heard the term Boxing Day. It's December 26th, the day after Christmas. And I think it comes from an old English tradition that the lord and lady of the manor would take all the foodstuffs left over from the Christmas dinner and perhaps supplement them a little bit and bring them to their tenants throughout the domain in a box. So it was Boxing Day. But I think that we don't do that here in America because feudalism is dead and we don't have lords and ladies of the manor. However, I think there's a new tradition. December 26th is the day you take all the stuff you got for Christmas, put it back in the box, and take it back to the store for a refund. You exchange. It's the day you exchange stuff. So we'll call it Boxing Day for a different reason. But we're going to do a Boxing Day holiday edition of the Tech Guy next week. I will help you with the stuff you got decide whether to put it in the box or get it to work. That's what I'm here for. Now, we're going to help our caller here in San Diego, Steve, because he's about to buy one of those beautiful new 5K iMacs. It's an interesting story. The screen is stunning. It's not 4K, it's 5K. Super high resolution. Looks great. Color, for a photographer, it's a dream come true. And really, Apple can only do it because it's built into the computer. They can't, in fact, that computer will not drive a 5K external display. It can only do it because it's not connected through Thunderbolt or DisplayPort. It's direct connected to the motherboard. They had their own special chipsets they designed to make this all work. And I have to tell you, I have one. It is stunning. But the problem is storage, because it's an all-in-one computer, and so you really only have a couple of choices. You can't put two hard drives in there. Actually, they do with a Fusion drive, but it's not exactly two big hard drives. They have one 3-terabyte spinning drive and then a smaller 128-gigabyte SSD card on that drive. And the theory of the Fusion drive is you're going to get all of the capacity of a spinning drive. Plenty, 3 terabytes. That's a ton. But it'll be faster than a spinning drive because Apple's operating system will watch what you do and copy the stuff you need the fastest and the most and you read most often to the little SSD portion. And of course, that's going to be OS X probably. Maybe if you load Lightroom a lot, it'll be Lightroom. And that does speed things up a little. But my experience with the Fusion drive is it's nowhere near as fast as a full SSD.
Well, that was my question, whether I would notice the difference between the two, because it's interesting you'd said that the iMacs only have the big hard drive or the SSD drive. But I actually modified my previous iMac and did put an SSD drive in with my hard drive. And so I guess I got spoiled on that.
It does make a difference, doesn't it? Putting OS X in your apps on the SSD makes a huge difference. Boot times are speedier and everything. My experience with the Fusion drive is not that fast.
So the Fusion drive does not load and hold the apps in the SSD portion of the
It might. You don't know. You don't control it. Only Apple knows. And it has its own magic, algorithm for figuring out what to put on the speedy drive and what to put on the slower drive. One would assume that's going to be the operating system and the apps, but you don't control it. And there's no way you can control it. There's also issues. For instance, they may have fixed this, but for a while I couldn't run Windows on this machine because Windows doesn't have that Fusion capability. It just sees two hard drives. It's also possible to accidentally unpair the drives, and then you're really, it's a mess. You have to rebuild everything.
Yeah, and that's what I've been reading online is if you've got the choice to...
I get the SSD.
Clear the Fusion.
Yeah. Now, if you're really willing to spend money, what I did is I got, on my Mac Pro, I got an internal, relatively small, you don't need a giant one, because, it's just going to hold the operating system and the apps. If you do decide to use Boot Camp and run Windows, it should be bigger, but probably 128 is big enough. Certainly 256 is big enough for the internal drive. And then I got a little big disk, which I love, and that is an external Thunderbolt 2 drive. They're expensive. It's $12.99 for a terabyte. But it's just as fast as an internal drive.
Right.
And the only negative is, you have this beautiful all-in-one computer, and now you're hanging things off of it.
Yeah, but, with the amount of storage that I need, I pretty much always have to be tethered to hard drives.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I think if speed is of the essence, and I think it is, I love it when stuff, the Mac boots fast, everything happens fast, then I'd get an SSD.
All right.
All right?
I'll do that.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Leo.
Have a good one. We just... spend some money for a little gift for yourself for the holidays. Jack Garden Grove, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Leo. Welcome. Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. Happy holidays.
Yeah, you too. Been listening for a long time.
Well, I appreciate that, sir.
I got a situation with my new modem that came from Time Warner. Yeah, well, I hooked it up to my iMac. Everything seemed to be working fine. And every once in a while, it just stops. It dumps me offline. I have to restart the computer and everything starts working again.
And you're using it hardwired directly into your Mac?
Yes, sir.
Not Wi-Fi?
No. Well, what's odd is the Wi-Fi works on my iPad and also on my Xbox, but not on the iMac.
First of all, Wi-Fi is a black art, and for some reason, Apple seems to have a lot of trouble with Wi-Fi. Yosemite has had tons of trouble with Wi-Fi. iOS 8 has tons of trouble with Wi-Fi. Apple's not alone. Microsoft Surface has had tons of trouble with Wi-Fi. It's just hard to do Wi-Fi, I guess.
Yeah, this is an older iMac. It's a 10.6.8.
Okay, well, you're not using Yosemite, but... my guess would be it's the cable modem itself. And
the new modem they gave me?
Yeah. They say new, but it's somebody else's modem. You know, you're just renting it.
Yeah.
Ask Time Warner if you can buy your own.
Oh, okay. All right. I was considering doing that.
That's what I do. I bought an Aeris. There are a lot of they'll tell you which ones you can use.
That's what they gave me was an Aeris.
Yeah. But who knows how old it is. And
oh, okay.
You know? And it may be something Time Warner's doing. You know, they may be traffic shaping. They may be pausing. Internet is, you know, it should be more reliable than it is. It's not unusual. I would say get your own modem and get your own router.
Okay.
And you're going to get better results. Plus, you'll save yourself money in the long run because you're going to their modem rental is going up on Time Warner to $8 a month.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, you know, in a year you'll pay for your own modem. And having your own router makes a big difference. In fact, I would get an app. It's expensive, but I'd get an Airport Extreme. Those really work best. Yeah.
Okay.
Those really work best.
It's like the normal setup for setting up a modem and things like that.
Yeah, the cable modem is pretty straightforward. Make sure you get a up-to-date Aeris or the similar. They'll tell you what kinds to get, but make sure you get DOCSIS 3, DOCSIS 3. That's the current standard. That'll give you the best speed.
DOCSIS?
DOCSIS. DOCSIS.
3.
Okay. And I just think you're better off with your own equipment. You know, they recycle it. Somebody, you know, is done with it. They bring it back. They dust it off, yeah. And they ship it to you. And who knows what it's been through. Good luck.
All right. Big fan. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. And Louis in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. Hi, Louis.
Hello. Hey, Leo. This is my fourth time calling this year.
And I ask you each time, is it Louis or Louis?
Louis.
One of these days I'll remember.
It's okay. Call me Lou if you want.
Hey, Lou.
So what's going on is I want to kind of experiment with Shoutcast. As you know, I was doing my own radio show on the university network. And now I kind of want to expand my knowledge of how the back end works, like technology and that.
Yeah.
I was wondering who you would recommend for an extremely inexpensive Shoutcast server hosting so I could experiment with this stuff. Because my personal network has awful issue of just dying out, so it's not really a good way to test it and experiment with Shoutcast.
Yeah. You know, and the nice thing about an audio stream is it doesn't take that much bandwidth, but if, you know, you get 20 people listening simultaneously, it'll use up a pretty good chunk. So
yeah,
the main issue
is my router just up and dies randomly.
Yeah, most of the time I don't recommend people run radio, you know, internet radio services on their own internet service provider. It may, in many cases, be a violation of the terms of service. A lot of times, home internet service providers, consumer internet service providers, don't allow you to run a server. Well, Shoutcast is a server. So that might not even be okay. So I usually recommend people go to a service provider. I don't know who the most affordable is. I usually recommend Live365. Shoutcast itself kind of, I think, went out of business or got bought or something like that.
When Winamp was
Winamp owned them. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, because the Winamp was the guy who created Winamp also created Shoutcast.
Right. Shoutcast is a great technique or technology for making internet radio. If you think about it, what is internet radio? Well, really, it's just sending a continuous stream of audio files out that people download and play back on their computers. Winamp, of course, was an MP3 player, played the MP3 audio file format. Turns out MP3s are very compact. They're about one-tenth the size of the uncompressed audio. So they make really a very good format for streaming radio as well. So Nullsoft, the makers of Winamp, created this specification for Shoutcast. It's kind of open source, so it's not like it's limited to any one company. And really all it is streaming MP3s. You send out one MP3, people download it, they can play it as they're downloading it. So that's the streaming part. Then that song ends, they start sending out the next MP3, they continually play It's just like a radio station. So it's MP3 streaming. So it's pretty straightforward. There, you can go to Shoutcast. I don't think they're the most affordable. There is somebody still running it. But I think Live 365 is a good choice. The advantage of something like Live 365 as well is you're in a space where others are. So people go to you to listen to your streaming. So, you know, people are going to find you. They do have, I think, a free version and a paid version. So you should investigate there.
Yeah, because what I was thinking about doing basically was creating an unlisted channel, which is basically what I would do to experiment with it. And I was going to experiment with creating sort of scripts that would switch out which playlists to use at different times.
Right. And that's one of the nice things about Shoutcast is the things that you're sending out are dictated by a script, a playlist, an M3U playlist. So it's very easy to do.
Yeah. My plan was going to have it set to randomize and then have it basically go from this point, let's say, from this point to this point, play this.
If you just want to do it yourself, you certainly could do it on your own computer and have people log into you. Again, it might be an issue in terms of your terms of service with your internet service provider. On the Mac, we used to stream our audio content from my podcast network ourselves using something called Nicecast, which is an inexpensive program from Rogue Amoeba. It runs on your Mac and will automatically, it allows you to add your voice. It allows you to play songs back, allows you to be a DJ. It's quite good. Like it a lot, and you could try that for free. It's just $59 if you want to buy it. And then that just, you know, if you only have two or three listeners, I think you could do it from your own home probably. Or you could go to a server company and servers aren't that expensive now. For Windows, I'm sure there's a similar program. Sam Broadcaster, says Caplux. Sam Broadcaster. It's a lot of fun. And I think nowadays, anybody can be a radio broadcaster. The trick is to get an audience. Icecast is FOSS. Shoutcast is not. Okay, that's good to know. So Icecast is the open source version of Shoutcast. And it was the beginning of this year, in fact, January 1st of 2014, that AOL announced it was selling Winamp and Shoutcast to Radionomy, which is a internet broadcasting service. Sam Broadcaster. It's at Spatial, SPACIAL.com. Start your internet radio station with Sam Broadcaster. Looks like another good choice. And that's also MP3 streaming. Good luck, Lewis. Nice to talk to you. Brett, Woodbridge, New Jersey. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brett.
How you doing, Leo? I have a few questions for you.
Okay.
Because the last caller answered my question when he was talking about his iMac computer. My sister has an iMac computer, and she's on the wireless, and there's times when she's getting disconnected because I have the modem from Comcast and the Netgear router dual band in my room. How can I make her room hardwired as well so she wouldn't have this problem?
Is your room right next to yours? Is it, how far away is it?
It's if I go out of my room to the living room, then it's maybe about a couple of feet, I guess.
Okay. You don't want to run a wire, though, because that would somebody would trip over it.
No, I don't want to run a wire.
You want to do it wireless, but the problem with wireless is you're doing it wireless, and she's having trouble with it dropping out, probably because of the distance. You can do a couple of things. We have a similar problem at home. There are parts of the house I can't get the Wi-Fi, so I extended the Wi-Fi. In my case, I'm using an AirPort Extreme, so I got an Apple AirPort Express. And it's actually really easy. Apple's AirPort configurator just says, I see you have an AirPort Express. You want to use that to extend your network? Yes, I do. And it makes it expands the footprint. So that's one way to do it. Generally best to buy that repeater from the same company that made the original router. Netgear, Linksys, whoever makes your router, they also make repeaters. The other way to do it is with something called Powerline Networking, which didn't used to work so well, but has gotten much better. And then you just use your existing power lines to do it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Back to the phones we go. Mary in Los Angeles. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, my browser was hacked by something called Trovi, T-R-O-V-I. Hmm. And I took the better part of that Sunday getting rid of it. It liked Google Chrome, so I uninstalled that. I tried to install it. It was back again. And ever since, I've just been using Mozilla.
Trovi is an instance of something that has become the bane of modern Windows computing called Conduit. We loathe Conduit. It is a browser hijacker object that is sometimes people are reluctant to call it malware because Conduit is kind of a semi-legitimate company, and but it isn't. It isn't an okay thing. I think it's malware.
Yeah, I wonder how it got in.
Often comes with free software. So if your brother's downloading stuff from download.com or other sites where, you know, they have shareware or freeware.
Yeah.
These are aggregators, Softpedia. These are aggregators. So you're not getting it from the original creator of the software. You're getting it from a software library. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, and you know, CNET's owned by a company you might have heard of called CBS.
Okay.
Columbia Broadcasting System.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then, so they own download.com. And you go to download.com and you think, well, how bad could this be? It's owned by CBS. And you download it. And in the process of downloading it, instead of downloading the file or the program you're actually looking for, you download a downloader, which you don't really need.
Yeah.
But they say, oh, you need our downloader. And then in that downloader, there's a payload of adware. That's the probably the more appropriate term than malware.
Right.
The adware is nothing anybody wants.
Exactly.
Which is why I think of it as malware. Nobody wants it. They have to trick you to get you to install it. Mm-hmm. And they say, oh, no, this is going to improve your search. We're going to help you find things. And, you know, we're going to pop up special offers from our, you know, our very carefully selected sponsors, and it's all BS. It's just junk. And unfortunately, it's pretty common in these downloaders to have it automatically checked that you will install these. You can uncheck it. You can say no, but you have to be looking at it. Most people just go, yeah. Okay.
It was funny, though, because I tried to think if I did anything like that. I'm usually super careful about not doing anything like that. And I had been watching YouTube videos the night before, and I was wondering if maybe it came in somehow that way.
Oh, you think you got it on there?
I woke up that Sunday morning, and my browser had this wacky appearance, and there was a little square there with those ugly ads, you know?
Yeah. But you want that. That's a convenience to you, the customer. Those ugly ads are saving you money. I know. Isn't it horrible?
It was awful.
It's horrible. And by the way, okay, so I don't know if it came from CBS, but that is one of the people that does that to you.
Okay.
So it does not come sneaking through YouTube, no.
Okay, interesting.
Unless, and this is not an uncommon way to get bad stuff on your system, you thought you were on YouTube, but it was a site that just looked like YouTube.
That would be weird.
This can happen. You'll get an email, or very common on Facebook, a link from a friend that says, hey, you won't believe what you did last night, but I've got the video here. And you go, oh, my gosh, wait a minute, didn't I go to bed early? And you get a little nervous. Wait, let me click that link. It came from a friend after all. You click the link, and it brings you to a site that looks just like YouTube or some other video playing site. And then, and this is the payload, it says, oh, gosh, I would love to show you this video, what you did last night, but you need an update to Flash.
Uh-huh.
And you go, oh, well, you know, of course I do. I always need, it seems like every time I use this computer, I need an update to Flash. So you don't pay too much attention. You go to a site that looks like it's a Flash, you know, Adobe Flash download site. You download it, you install it. So the first thing it does is hacks your Facebook to make sure you send the same link to everybody you know. And then it puts stuff on your system. But that's malware. That's really bad stuff. So that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Much more likely, but that's because it's impersonating YouTube and impersonating Adobe. Not because they really are. You won't get malware from YouTube itself.
No, I thought, why is this happening now, you know, when I've done this over?
Yeah, don't blame, the victim blames themselves, don't they? It's a terrible thing. among all the other horrible things about this. CBS, shame on you. Don't do this anymore. And it's not just CBS. And it may not be where you got it from, download.com, but certainly you can. So Trovi is a search helper. It helps you to see more ads. They actually, we can't call them malware because it comes as a payload and you said okay, even though it was really fine print or whatever. And because if you go to Trovi.com, they have an uninstall. Well, we couldn't be malware. We actually asked you if you wanted us. You said yes. And then even if you change your mind, we make it possible for you to uninstall. So they even have a way to uninstall. You probably already saw it in the control panel, the add remove programs or programs and features, depending on which version of Windows you're using.
Oh, it was really nasty, though.
They don't really want you to remove them. They just want to give the appearance.
No, and even when you went to move your mouse over it, it did it in such a way that wouldn't allow you to get to the box that you checked.
Isn't that horrible?
It was wild.
Don't you want to strangle somebody? How can this be considered good behavior? This is malware. I don't care. Yes, you asked, and yes, you have a way to understand. This is malware. Anybody who puts something on your computer by sneaking it on or by tricking you, something you didn't and would never in a million years want, that's malware. So in theory, you can remove it just from the control panel. Mm-hmm. You might have to change your browser settings. You might, for instance, one of the things that Trovi does is change your homepage on your browser.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
Yeah. Oh, no, this is a convenience to you.
Oh, excuse me.
We're doing you a favor. Come on. Don't you appreciate us? So you're going to have to change your settings on the home page.
Yeah.
There you may find that it has added an extension to your browser. You can usually, for instance, there's a toolbar that Trovi installs, and you can uninstall that by going into your browser's settings and disabling and removing it. It's really a pain.
It was. Yeah.
Trovi itself is not considered a virus, despite all of this bad behavior, because you can remove it fully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't make it easy.
No, not at all. It took hours.
When you're in your ad remove or your programs and features control panel, I would look at everything. First of all, sort by date.
Okay.
And look at everything that was installed around that time.
Okay.
Because there usually isn't just one thing.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Remove anything that says ads. You know, usually it's pretty obvious. And you will probably see something called Conduit as well. That's the company behind Trovi.
Okay.
And that's another nasty little adware thing.
Yeah.
So, and unfortunately, this is a way that download.com monetizes itself. A lot of download sites monetize. You know, you are using bandwidth. There is a cost to you. But I think that this is not the way to monetize, by tricking your users.
Just nasty.
Yeah. Even if you get Java now from Oracle, hey, this is one of the biggest companies in the world, and you download Java, which is a free program, it will try to install the Ask toolbar when you do it. And so you just have to move slowly and look carefully, because whenever you've got a wrapper, a download wrapper, you got to make sure you uncheck all those boxes and don't download all those things.
Definitely.
I'm sorry that happened.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not something you did, probably. It happens to all of us.
Okay.
Is your brother mad at you? Tell him Leo said it's not my fault.
Okay.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's by special request from Heather Hammond, Arlene Love. Singing last night, wasn't it? Was it last night?
I guess a couple nights ago.
The very last Letterman holiday special. Of course, David Letterman retiring after 30 years. And Darlene Love, always a highlight of that special. Happy holidays to all of you. I hope you're going to have a wonderful holiday week. We'll be back next week, of course, helping you with Unboxing Day. So take all that stuff out of the box that you got for Christmas or Hanukkah, and we'll help you set it up. 8888 Ask Leo. We continue on with the calls. Last segment of the show today. Steve in L.A. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome.
I am a PC, Mac, Android, Google guy.
Wow. You're agnostic. That's what we call platform agnostic.
I'm platform everything. and I just got rid of my Nexus 5 to get an iPhone 6 Plus.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Mainly because of the camera. I needed a better camera.
It's a stunning camera. And the Nexus 5 is not a stunning camera.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, terrible would be charitable, yes.
But the phone is fantastic.
I love the Nexus. You know, I bought a Nexus 6, which is its successor. Love it, but it's a little big. I have an iPhone 6 Plus. You want it big, obviously. You're going big or going home.
I needed it for work. I'm in my car a lot.
I'm a fan of the large phone. I think this is becoming the primary computer that we use most of the time. I think you should have as big a screen as you could reasonably carry around.
Yeah, and so my friends, my Android friends, you know,
they're shocked, chagrined, so, dismayed.
They're loving me, and now the Android friends, they think I'm a turncoat.
Yeah,
switched over to Apple.
Isn't that ridiculous? It's such a team sport. Well, who cares? Get what you like.
So this is my challenge. Android, and I have like stuff on Drive. I have stuff on OneDrive from Microsoft.
Yeah.
I got stuff on Dropbox. You know, I've got stuff in the cloud in different places, depending on what it is. And what Android was fantastic at is I can go into Gmail and attach from anywhere. I could even attach from
Apple. Yeah, that's the, you know, and it goes the other way, too. When you share on Android, anything that's been installed on your Android phone can be an endpoint to the sharing. With Apple, it's very much more constrained because Apple, the philosophy behind the iOS, behind the iPhone, is to limit you to keep you out of trouble, I guess. And so Apple has to approve these things. Now, extensions are starting to slowly break down this barrier. So now an app can install an extension that allows you to be part of notifications, to share. But it doesn't solve your issue, unfortunately.
Right. So,
because you're going in the opposite direction.
Well,
there's no file manager. You know, on an Android phone, you'd say, oh, we'll just get the ES file manager or Astro or whatever. But no, there's no such thing on Apple because Apple won't approve such an app.
So my question is, I got Gmail. When I'm in Gmail, it allows me to get to Drive or Google Docs or whatever those are because it's Gmail.
Right.
But I can't get anywhere else.
No.
I can get the pictures.
That's called security, my friend.
So I want to know, is there an app out there?
No.
There isn't.
No. Welcome to Apple. So the reason Apple constrains all this is because free-flowing communication between multiple programs is potentially risky. Because a malware could then do something to, you know, upload malware to your Dropbox and download it. So Apple very carefully vets everything and only allows, connectivity, you know, explicitly. You can't just add stuff. This is what you've given up.
I gave it up.
You've moved from, and this is probably the most, in my opinion, the biggest distinction. And as I said, Apple with its extensions platform on iOS 8 is starting to break down that wall. But it goes in the opposite direction from what you want. You want to be able to attach a file from anything. And Apple really doesn't give you access to file systems. It's very constrained.
Right. So
you may find, and this might be a better solution, that if you go into an app like OneDrive, that you can then send a file from OneDrive to Gmail. In other words, stop trying to do it from Gmail. Go to where the file is.
Right. But sometimes I need to go to different places to get different things. So this is my solution. I think what I'm going to have to do is switch over, put all my needed business work and my photos onto Drive.
Yes.
Drive.
Yes.
And then
you could do it. Because Google can talk to Google Drive. Yeah.
Then I'm good. And I can get some stuff from, you know, the iPhone camera, but. So
They call it a walled garden.
Yep.
Because they're walls, there are barriers, but the idea is that by doing so, we keep it safer, easier to use, blah blah blah. And really, this is the philosophical choice people make. Yeah. Fundamentally, an iPhone isn't so different. iOS isn't so different from Android. Fundamentally, mobile operating systems are basically the same. But there is a philosophical difference, which absolutely gets reflected in what you can and cannot do.
Right, right. So what's interesting is now my Android friends, he sees my Apple and
he mocks you.
You're an artist.
Are you a barista?
You're a Democrat.
No, I don't. Yeah, see, I don't want to get in that polarizing point of view. There are definitely differences. There are differences in philosophy, and for many people, the iPhone is absolutely the right way to go.
Right.
I have many friends in the iOS world, and I, in fact, own iPhones and iPads. But when it comes to my personal device, you know what I choose? I choose Android because I want choice.
Right.
And by the way, it's yet to be demonstrated that Android is less secure than iPhone. People will debate you on that, but I'm sorry, it's not true. Apple's decisions are theoretical. But in practice, I don't think you're safer on the Apple platform than you are on Android. You're not. You're not any less safe on Android. Maybe that'd be a better way to put it. Because both are safe. But if you really had to make the distinction, Android is for geeks and iPhone is, you know, people who want to mess with stuff like file systems. And iPhone is for people who don't. I don't want to be bothered with files. What is that? I don't even know. I don't care. Just do what I want to do. Apple's very app-centric. And when you're in an app, you're in its own app world. And the apps, intercommunication between apps is very limited. And on purpose, by design. Last call of the day comes from Diane in Williamsburg, Pennsylvania. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Leo, and Merry Christmas, and thank you for taking my call real quick.
I'm thrilled. What can I do for you?
Okay, my question is, will an SIM card from an older phone, which my mom is 81 years old, work in an Obama phone?
An Obama phone. These are the low-cost phones for seniors and low-income folks.
What happened was, when my dad passed, it'll be a year ago, the 30th of this year, my brother and my mom, took it over and put it on Verizon.
My sense is not, I don't think so, but I will check into it. We're out of time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It depends who you get the phone from. Hold on a sec. So I think it may depend on who you get the phone from.
I've told you before how much I love my Epson workforce.
What company are you thinking of getting the phone from?
Okay, Leo, are you talking to me?
I am.
Okay, she has an AT&T phone.
Okay.
And the only way she knew how to use it was push one for my brother, whatever.
Yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Because she's 81 years old.
Of course.
She's from the old school.
Of course.
So through a disagreement, he canceled it. All she can get is 911. So I said, Mom, we'll go down and we'll get you an Obama phone.
Good.
So I got her an Obama phone.
And
so
who did you get it from, AT&T?
It's a Verizon phone.
Okay, so the AT&T SIM probably will not work in it.
That's what they're telling me. When I called them, they said everything canceled out when Billy canceled it.
So she's got a new number. It's a Verizon number.
Correct.
Now, she may be able to get her old number ported over to the Verizon phone if you want to do that.
That's fine.
Is that what you're trying to do, is save the number?
And everything in the address book.
That's gone.
That's the only way she knows how to get a hold of it.
Now, if you bring the old, do you still have the old phone?
Yes.
If you bring the old phone to your Verizon store, they can almost certainly get the address book over.
That's what I was thinking.
Yep. They can plug that into a machine. Almost all phone stores will do this.
Really?
They'll plug it into a machine. It sucks the address book out and then pumps it back into the new phone. They can help you certainly with that.
I hope so.
Yeah.
This has just been, you know, and it's really hard because right now we're coming up on the anniversary of my dad.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound, but...
Oh, I would be sad, too. I completely understand.
We were together for 65 years.
Oh, and I'm so sorry that your brother's being so mean.
I know. I don't understand.
What a meanie.
And he's just a younger little boy.
Oh, he's a twerp.
Yeah, really. But I said, seriously. And I thank you so much for taking my call. But I heard that lady talk.
I'm glad to help you. So these are called Lifeline phones. Every carrier has to offer them to qualified buyers. So you went to Verizon.
Correct.
That means that the AT&T SIM won't work, but it might not have worked anyway if the account was canceled. But
she told me when I called and I said, "Can I just take and put the SIM card?" Honestly, Leo, I only have a little track phone.
Did you only want to save the SIM card for the number? You just wanted to
the number.
So you call Verizon, you say, "I'd like to port." I'm presuming, even though brother canceled the phone, how recently did he do that?
2 months, a month ago.
So there's a limited time frame that you can get that number from AT&T.
She said, the way I understand, what she told me was, once he canceled that, everything on the SIM, she said, "I'm so sorry." She said, once he canceled that, the SIM card was gone.
Yeah. The SIM card's no longer usable. The phone number might be. There's a law. FCC requires that phone companies allow you to move your phone number from one company to another. But there's a period of time in which you can do that, at which point, if you don't do that, they may reassign that number. So the question is it still active? Is it still available? It has nothing to do with the SIM card.
But what about all the numbers on there?
That's on the phone. Those aren't on the SIM card. Well, they may be on the SIM card. If they are, you can get them off of it. It didn't cook it. It just means it can't be reused.
Oh, okay. And basically, that's what she was telling me. It's done.
No, she meant it can't be used in another phone. But anything stored on there, and there's a very few numbers you can store on a SIM card. But if that's where the numbers were stored, then you can move those over. They probably were stored in the phone, not the SIM card. But in any event, bring the SIM card and the phone to the Verizon store.
Correct.
Say, "I'd like to copy the phone's numbers off of here. Can you help me do that?"
Correct.
And then the other thing is, "And I'd like to port the phone number from AT&T to Verizon so that mom has the same number."
Right.
They may say, "Oh, no, that time has passed. I think you have 90 days, but I think so get in there quick."
Right.
And if Verizon says, "Oh, we don't have the gear," then you can go some other third-party phone stores do. But they should do that. It mostly is like if they're busy or not.
Right.
But they can copy the phone numbers off that phone and off the SIM card and put them in the new phone. Absolutely.
Leo, I thank you so much. I listen to you all the time, and I never thought I'd be calling you because I'm computer illiterate. I don't, you know, but we're just from the old school. And when Billy did this to my mom, it was like, "Are you kidding me?
Dang you, Billy!
Are you really?
You twerp! Stop it! Knock it off!"
It was over some stupid disagreement.
Oh, of course it is. And you know what? Billy feels bad already, I'm sure.
I don't know, but
you oughta.
I said to mom.
You know how people get with their parents.
We got her an Obama phone, and it was like, "Okay, Mom. You don't have to worry about paying him the $10 a month. Come on."
Yeah, you can do that, Mom.
He works for PennDOT.
Oh, forget it. Tell him just to
35 years
get off his duff and do something.
Are you kidding me?
Billy.
Yeah, really.
Billy, don't be a hero.
Yeah, really.
Really, Billy. Knock it off.
Thank you.
All right. All right, Diane.
Leo, you've been awesome.
All right,
thank
sweetheart.
You so much.
Merry Christmas.
You helped me out.
All right. Take
Merry
care.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Bye.
Mom would tell you, "Merry ho ho."
Merry ho ho.
Aw.
That's what she'd say. Merry ho ho.
Tell Mom Merry ho ho back.
I will do that. She's coming up here in about an hour.
All right. And tell Billy to get off his duff and
stop. Really.
You know how it is with parents.
Thank you so much.
All right. Bye, Diane. My kids are like that. You get a short temper with your parents. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.